Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to On Point. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and in Studio B, we have the very wonderful and happy on this sunshiny day, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you, sir?
Fine, Mr. Allen. Thank you. I don't know how shiny it is, you know, given that thunderstorm that rolled through here early this morning. But, hey,
I was
thankful it could be snow out there. But, anyways, how are we doing, Mr. Allen? What do we have?
Well, we have a lot going on today, you know, with the recent incidents in town and with everything from MnDOT to Impact Minnesota to the shooting last night in North Minneapolis.
Terrible tragedy.
Yes,
two African-American women shot, gunned down. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and so we have a lot to do, but, you know, at the top of the hour here, I'm going to kick it over to you for our special guest and the introduction of her, and we'll go from there.
Okay. All right, Don. Let me take this opportunity for both our domestic and international audience to introduce one of the great civic leaders also in our city and co-owner of one of the longest-serving African-American businesses in the Twin Cities, Ms. Margaret Brooks. I want to welcome you, Ms. Brooks. Happy to have you with us.
Thank you.
All right. Personally, yours truly here has known the Brooks family, and certainly known of the service provided by the Brooks Mortuary, Funeral Home, however one wants to define that particular profession, has served this community with distinction and integrity for many, 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 many years.
That's correct.
And in fact, there's a little interplay here between myself and Ms. Brooks because her husband and I played basketball against each other in high school.
Wow.
Way back in 1954.
Wow.
So kind of give y'all an idea. But Ms. Brooks, we want to welcome you. The purpose inviting you, and we're very gracious of your acceptance, is unfortunately a couple of weeks ago, there was a terrible tragedy in the Minneapolis community, North Side. Nine-year-old African-American child by the name of Michael Sullivan was found deceased in the backyard of an abandoned house in 3200 block of Bryant Avenue North. And one of the first people to reach out to the family was Helen Williams, who has been a longtime facilitator in helping people in moments of sorrow, death, and et cetera. And I know
that's
correct. You and she have worked together for a number of years in your respective professions.
Yes.
And I know that Ms. Williams reached out not only to the family within 24 hours after the tragedy, but I know later she and you began some commiseration with respect to being of assistance to the family. If you could, within the confines of the professionalism, if you will, could you just walk us through, because controversy has erupted with regards to that no one reached out to the family, which I know personally is not true. So if you would, Ms. Brooks, could you just walk us through the events starting with your becoming aware of this tragedy?
Okay. First of all, thank you for having me on your show. Uh-huh. Helen Williams called me Monday and asked me, will I help this family, because she really helped so many people. She helped them. She did not get paid for this.
Okay.
This is what I told her I would do. Brooks Funeral Home would do this. I will charge the family $2,100. I will go over to the other funeral home, which was, I believe, is Washoe McGreevy. I will pick up the body. Mm-hmm. I will negotiate with them. I will give them something because they did pick up the body and bomb the body. But I will give them something that's between that funeral home and me.
Mm-hmm.
I would take the body from them, bring it to my facility, to the Brooks Funeral Home. I would sit down with the family and tell them this is what I would charge, $2,100. And I'm doing this because that's the right thing to do. I'm
yes,
a mother.
Ma'am. Okay.
I would give them a casket. I have a white metal casket that's included with the $2,100. I would transport the body in my hearse down to my family's funeral home in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
For $2,100, that's the best I can do. I can't do any more. But they refused. When Helen Williams told them what I would do, she refused. She said no. She wanted to let the body
now,
stay
let me,
where
let me,
it's
let,
at.
Let's be clear for the purpose of our audience. We're not talking about Ms. Williams said no. You're talking now about a member identified as a member of the family, a woman identified as an aunt. Is that correct?
An aunt, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The aunt. She said no. And I spoke with her, too, and she said no. She want to keep it just like it is.
And let me ask the question, because now we're into a little bit of journalism and communication and interviewing.
Uh-huh.
Keep it like it is. What was that supposed to mean?
She want to stay where she's at, stay with the funeral home that she's dealing with. She want to stay with them, and I believe she said they've charged her $3,600.
Okay, so she rejected the offer of $2,100 in return for continuing a relationship with Washburn McPhoebe for $36, which I understand later became $3,711. Okay.
Yes.
Continue on if you would, please, Ms. Brooks. Thank you.
And so, but I could do it for $2,100. I can do what they do even better. I would want somebody to look like me. I respect that funeral home. They respect me. But when she turned me down, I just told her I'm so sorry, you know, about her nephew. And that was it. But Helen Williams had someone who was going to write me a check for $2,100.
So there was a, let me put it like this, there was an anonymous donor who was prepared to accept and take up the $2,100 obligation.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Continue on, please. Thank you.
That's if she would accept, you know, if she wanted me to help her. But she stayed where she's at, and so. But I did speak with her again, and she said that.
And could I ask you, when is the most recent time that you've spoken with the woman identified as the aunt?
Okay, she called me yesterday, and she texted me twice this morning. She texted me twice this morning, and I didn't respond back to her because I was with another family. But the service will be in Chicago on Monday.
That's what I understand on at a facility on Halsted, is that correct?
Okay, Gatlin's Funeral Home.
Yes, on Halsted.
Yes.
In Chicago,
they have,
Illinois. Okay.
Yes. The service is going to be at Prayer Band Church on 41st and Michigan on Monday.
Okay.
Visitation is at 10 and pending. She didn't tell me the time of the funeral because she got to work that out, the time that the service will start. So
she hadn't worked that out yet? Okay.
No.
And again, for our purpose of our listening audience, so the arrangements were finalized sometime in the last number of hours, and so we'll be on Monday in Chicago at the facility that you just named. And the time is being worked on. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
another visitation will be at 10. From my understanding, because I was getting a lot of calls coming to me, and I guess my understanding, didn't nobody know where the service or anything was going to be at. And so when I talked with her, when she called me, I asked her if it's okay if I could give the information out because people are calling me.
Right.
And she said yes. So I just got all that information from her, which was last night.
Okay.
All right. So I shared it with other people who was calling.
Okay. Right. And I know that my associate, Mr. Allen, had obtained similar information. I know that there are a couple other people that have been calling Chicago. I think that the deceased, the young baby, arrived in Chicago, I think, on
today.
A flight around 9:40 this morning.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I know that you don't know, and so technically it's probably not appropriate, but I'm going to ask that for the purpose of, you know, journalistic investigation. Do we know who paid for the transporting of the child to Chicago?
From my understanding, I guess that $3,600.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that. I don't know any of that, but I guess it came out of that. I don't know.
Let me tell you what I was told by officials and authorities here in Minnesota, that you actually had worked very hard to kind of do a reciprocal kind of arrangement, and that Washburn McCreevy decided that the $3,600, which ultimately was paid, that they would take the responsibility for the transporting of the deceased to Chicago. So it appears that Washburn McCreevy actually wound up paying for the transportation also. I guess that's what we're to be led to believe. Okay. All right, then. Let me go back now and reconstruct what has happened. You have talked with the woman identified as the aunt on a couple of occasions. You were approached by Ms. Helen Williams on Monday of this week.
Right.
You began discussions, including discussions with Washburn McCreevy. You reached an understanding of $2,100 for the total package that included the preparation of the body here in Minneapolis, which included the embalming. You then were going to provide
casket,
your own professional.
Casket. That would include
casket,
a casket.
A beautiful white casket.
Was
that a child's casket or an adult casket?
I could get any kind of casket they wanted.
Oh, okay. All right, then. Okay. And so a white casket and then arrangements.
Take the body down.
And one of your limousines. Right, which is properly constructed to handle your hearse. That's right, to properly handle that kind of obligation, responsibility, and transportation.
Right.
Okay. And to your family, I want to be clear so folks understand that your family also has a mortuary in Chicago, Illinois.
In Chicago, yes.
Yes, in Chicago. Now, we're not talking about your own business, which you're a co-owner of here in St. Paul.
On the west side of Chicago. Of Chicago.
Okay. All right. Well, one, appreciate it and appreciate the clarity because it's obvious that clarity is important here with so many different stories going out. And so many different figures initially coming out as early as Monday that anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 was going to be needed and et cetera.
$2,100.
Gotcha. I understand. It is so good to get clarity, if you will, on what has become an issue of controversy, if you will. You know, let me say it like this, and, you know, I'm not a religious person in the extent that I've run back and forth church, but I appreciate the importance of, you know, heart and soul and et cetera. You know, just God bless you and Ms. Helen Williams. I mean, really, God bless
Thank
both of you
so much.
For
Thank
the
you
efforts
so
you were involved in. Okay?
And that's
appreciate
the right
you.
Thing to do.
All right.
Right.
Appreciate you calling us and giving the time and say hello to the basketball player in your household.
I sure will. I sure will.
All right.
Ms. And y'all have a good afternoon.
All right. It's been a pleasure. Take care. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. We have we've just had the opportunity to get actually a live discussion, what we consider to be a overview, an appropriate overview of the dynamics, I guess that's the word that I would use, that began almost a week ago with respect to the preparation and the activities to initiate and carry out the preparations for the internment, the burial of a 9-year-old African-American child here in the city of Minneapolis on the north side along the 3200 block of Bryant Avenue North. There's been so much confusion. I know that my colleague has come under attack, criticisms with respect to folks asking, you know, about the money, how much money was raised, and that becomes an interesting question now because let's say that we can identify the $3,600, $3,700 as being the amount of money that was paid to Washburn McCreevy. And clearly, Washburn McCreevy and Ms. Brooks of Brooks Funeral Home here in St. Paul, Minnesota, we are the Twin Cities, if you will, allow for that body to be transported by charter, if you will, probably either FedEx or UPS to Chicago, Illinois. The funeral will be on Monday. For those that have been asking, the time certain has not yet, according to Ms. Brooks, has not yet been finalized, but I assume it will probably be a noon or 11 o'clock a.m. service in Chicago. In fact, maybe what we can do, do we have Mr. Allen, are you back with us?
Yes, sir, I am here.
Okay, do we have the phone number for the facility in Chicago, Illinois? Let's give that out over the air so people can call There may be additional donations that may want to be made to this young baby, this 9-year-old African-American child who, oh, that's right, the investigation is still going on.
Yes, yes.
The coroner here, by the way, or medical examiner, as we call them here in Minnesota, has not made a determination, Mr. Allen. He has not indicated the cause of death. It is an open investigation with the Minneapolis Police Department's Homicide Unit and Child Protection still carrying out an investigation. There could be possible arrest, if you will, as it pertains to those responsible for the death of this 9-year-old African-American child found hung in a backyard in a northern part of the city of Minneapolis. Do we have that number, Mr. Allen?
Yes, sir. The Gatling Chapel, the number is 773-881-4111. Again, that number, the Gatling Chapel in Chicago, Illinois, is 773-881-4111. And, Mr. Edwards, I'd like to let listeners know that I did place a call to the Gatling Chapel, and they were on their way to the airport to pick up the remains and bring them back to the funeral home. And that was
I understood that as a part of our consultation and production meeting earlier this morning. As you probably noticed, I said to Miss Brooks, and again, God bless her, God bless Helen Williams, and certainly God bless this community that rallied, if you will, in a situation in which there still needs to be some explaining. I got to tell you that I had known for 6 days that the offer of $2,100 from Miss Brooks and her corporation had been made. For whatever reason, it was turned down, and we were hearing numbers like $10,000 and $15,000 needed to intern this African-American 9-year-old child, and I'm just not quite understanding that. But what's important is that this child will be laid to rest. His journey begins, and that journey will be into the arms of angels and into heaven, if you will. And I just hope that there's nothing that comes out that will be of a surprise to us in the
yes.
African-American community, if you know what I'm
yes.
saying.
I know exactly.
Well, what else do we have, Mr. Allen? Because I have to indicate to our listening audience that Mr. Allen attended yesterday a interesting meeting at Mortenson, the big construction company that is the general contractor for our the Vikings football stadium, the People Stadium, as we call it here in Minnesota, $1 billion project. The purpose was to get everybody in position to bid on contracts, be pre-qualified, and et cetera. Mr. Allen, my associate, tells me, and I understand you have published videos of the meeting at Mortenson in Golden Valley.
Yeah,
Mr. Allen, are you telling me that of the 68 people that were invited and were in the room, that only one black person, he possibly being an African, were present? There was no other African Americans there?
And Mr. Edwards, that was absolutely correct. But before we get into the Mortenson thing, which is an important piece, I just received a text message and an exclusive video of a vigil that was held for the 9-year-old boy yesterday. And we actually have a caller on the phone.
Now, let me get something correct. Was it yesterday or the day before?
I think it was the day before. I wasn't so sure I didn't get to
read
those
Thursday.
Things. Yes.
On Thursday, at the site of the deaths, the tragic death of this 9-year-old African-American. There, you say there's a video. Now, is this from WCCOT or is this a private video?
This is a independent video, and I actually have the producer online who would like to chime in.
The
That's
producer?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yes.
Well, go ahead. Why don't you bring them on, and let's hear from them through you. Okay.
Okay. Hello. You're live
hi.
On the air. Hey. Hi. How
hi,
are you?
This is good. This is Terry Izagary from the Minneapolis Mayor / Voice for Diversity in America, and I attended what I thought was going to be a vigil for little Michael Sullivan, and it was actually a press conference in asking for money. I would like to thank
Mr. I'm sorry. Excuse me, Ms. Disagary. Let me get my thoughts around this. This was a press conference to ask for money to do what again?
To help bury little Michael Sullivan.
Okay.
And the little 9-year-old that you're speaking of,
okay.
That was found hung in the backyard on 32nd and Bryant. I am very glad, because of donations given by some generous people, that this little boy is finally going to be laid to rest properly. I need to say thank you to Ms. Brooks for calling in and verifying what I had written in a story, that they had made an offer to bury this child. And I was confused.
Let me do this for journalistic purposes, Ms. Issa-Guttery. When you say they had made offer, you were talking about who, Ms. Brooks and Ms. Williams?
Correct, yes.
I'm sorry. Okay. We want absolute transparency and clarity here, because there's so much tension right now. But go right ahead.
And I that's why I was disappointed with this press conference asking for money without full disclosure that there had been an offer. And I'm getting extreme backlash, saying that I'm insensitive, I'm evil, and I am the most sensitive person when it comes to our children dying in this city, because every life is valuable, and every child should be buried in a timely fashion.
With dignity.
With dignity, absolutely.
Okay.
So I don't understand why they were asking for money when some of these leaders knew that there was an offer, and is this type of treatment and compassion going to pay forward when other children are killed in our city?
Well, I mean, that's certainly a good question that certainly only the leaders can answer. I well remember a number of children that have been murdered here in our city, and I really haven't heard anybody really stepping up per se. In fact, I remember in 2011 we had back-to-back-to-back killings of young African-American males. And I remember one sad situation, Mr. Allen and the caller, in which a young child by the name of Braxton was laid to rest in a cardboard casket.
And I attended that funeral, and nobody...
Oh, you did? You were at that funeral?
I was at that funeral, and everybody was aghast. A gentleman behind me said, they have that boy in a prison box. I didn't see the compassion coming out to make sure that this young child, and the family was in the same type of situation. So how do we garner what child's life, loss of life, because we're losing too many of them, including our teenagers.
Let me ask the question of my colleague, Mr. Allen. What was the actual date that we agreed on that young Mr. Sullivan was found about 8:30 in the evening, hanging in the backyard? What was the date of that? Monday or Sunday or what?
No, that was more than 2 weeks ago, I think, on a Thursday.
Oh, it was on a Thursday.
2 weeks ago,
weeks
ago this past Thursday was when he was found.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. The reason I asked that question, Ms. Issa-Guttery, is that I was trying to get a handle on what happened to the money that was raised in between that period and last Monday, when I heard leadership indicated that the community needed to come up with it between $10,000 and $15,000.
Well, like I say, let
me ask the question, because this is, okay, we're moving rapidly and stuff. Was there money collected or were there any declarations at the press conference that money had already or was getting ready to be negotiated for or committed to?
Yes, you can see in the video one of B.J. Smith, Mad Dad's volunteers, had stated
National
they were going
president
door
to Mad Dad's. Is that who you're talking about? Is that B.J. Smith?
That
National
they had gone
door
to door looking for donations. And if you look at the video, you can see B.J. Smith handing the auntie, who never gave her name, by the way, has never publicly given her name, except to the certain people she chooses to speak to on through Facebook or something, I don't know. And you can see her putting the money on the clipboard. It's at the part in the video where she, how do you pronounce his last name? Duran?
Dean?
Dean.
Ray Dean.
Ray
State
Dean,
Representative Ray Dean.
Ray Dean
State
was
Democratic
talking to her.
Democratic Representative. Let's get it so that our audience is clear, ladies and gentlemen. 58B, he is the first term You're saying he gave money?
No, not
reached out?
He was speaking. It's at that point in the video. He was speaking, and VJ handed her money, the auntie.
Oh.
The person I have no name for.
Okay.
And so my issue with my story was how much cash is really not accounted for. You know, the purpose was to bury this child, and that was accomplished, and
mm-hmm.
thank goodness. And there were good people. But, you know, I don't think people should be duped, you know, when taking advantage of people's kindness.
Let me go there because we want to move. Ms. O'Scary, you made a statement that you have been at vigils. How many vigils do you feel that you've been at over the years?
Oh, for just about every homicide that's happened in this city.
Well, we have quite a few here at Minneapolis. Is
correct.
That correct? Okay. Now, you were at the funeral for young Mr. Braxton in 2011?
Yes, at Shiloh Temple.
The child was in a prison coffin, per se. I mean, it's really a
And
cardboard.
I guess
it's
I'm even being polite
box,
by calling it a wooden box.
It
is basically cardboard that was starting to fall apart every time it was moved.
That's a
and
damn shame.
Just thinking about it just makes me want to cry.
Okay.
So for people
right,
to say I'm...
Mr. Gary, Mr. Allen, go ahead. Do you have any questions, Mr. Gary?
No. I was just I would appreciate you calling in, Terry. But we're gonna. But the thing about the cardboard box just struck me because we're burying kids that live in Minnesota, are born here in cardboard boxes, and someone that lives out of town. You know, I'm not denying them that. I think the people did a great job raising money. I congratulate each and every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But why do we always have to look for things out of town to make us feel good? You know,
good point.
We have this death, right? This you bury a kid in Shiloh who has contracts with the city. Some elected officials go there, and they let a child being buried in Minneapolis get laid in the ground in a cardboard box. They all.
And my understanding was the funeral home that handled that was McCreevy Washburn.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. It was McCreevy Washburn because there was some inquiry made to them about the quality of the casket, and this had come. This situation had come right after the gunning down of 13-year-old Gomez on
Correct.
The streets of our city, and there was an attempt by the Gomez family to reach out to leadership in our community for assistance in this sudden and brutal death, in which there has been a conviction, by the way, and young Mr. Gomez was. Contrary to what people were saying, he was not a thug or any of those things. And no one could raise anything at this particular point. Okay. Let me ask you a question, Ms. Issigar. Did you have an opportunity to talk to either, for purposes of authenticating some of this, either Ms. Brooks or Ms. Helen Williams, did you have a chance to interview them as it pertains to your stories?
You know, I did speak to both of them, and also got to say something for clarity. After the vigil, I spoke with neighbors, okay, which I'm not going at this time to share, you know, what took place in the conversation. But somebody who had spoken to a grandmother of little Michael Sullivan, a grandmother a few days earlier, wanted to know who was speaking for the press conference that day. And I turned around to try and find her, and the aunt had disappeared. I couldn't even find her to point her out. So, I was just confused by the whole thing.
Now, let me ask you this question, Ms.
And I do need to state, they only mentioned that little angel's name twice in 14 minutes and 20 seconds. They did not state one thing about his little life.
I see. Well, now, has Mr. Allen indicated before we brought you on the air that you have released and published and authorized a video that you took at the scene? I think you said something about a 14-minute video.
Correct. I taped the whole thing and I put it online.
Okay. All right. We Mr. Allen, any questions of this journalist?
No,
we want to thank you. It's a Gary, correct? Am I pronouncing it
correct? And I really appreciate your letting me speak today. And I do want to thank Ms. Brooks and Ms. Helen Williams because Ms. Helen Williams does not get paid, and she, her heart as well as Miss Brooks has buried a lot of people. Remember, Miss Williams had to go to Carrie Levin to help bury one person to get help.
She received a significant, she received the cost for the entire funeral from a Caucasian citizen in Eden Prairie. Mr. Allen, I don't know if you or our listeners are aware of that. That's interesting that Ms. Ishigeri remembers that happened just a couple months ago.
Yeah.
All right, we want to thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
All right,
thank
bye
you.
Bye.
Thank you. Hey, Mr. Edwards, we have a caller. Can we take that call and then before we move on?
Certainly, if it's relevant to what we've been discussing. Go ahead.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, caller, you're live on the air. Who am I speaking with?
This is Helen Williams.
Oh, Miss Williams, how are you doing? No, nice to hear your voice.
I'm good.
Okay. What can we do for you? What's happening?
I'm calling in. I know there's been a lot of discussion around the little 9-year-old boy that was buried. So I'm calling. I'm sorry I didn't hear anybody talk. I just got out of a basketball game.
Okay, let us go back over what has happened so far on this program, and we are now approximately 30 minutes in. Our first caller was Miss Margaret Brooks of Brooks Funeral Home in the city of St. Paul, and she really laid out to us the sequence of events, the chronology, and et cetera, and talked specifically that she had been approached by you, Miss Williams, for assistance and et cetera. She talked in terms of the offer that she made, the $2,100 that she was prepared, which would have included everything, including transporting the baby to Chicago. She talked about her family. Apparently, Miss Brooks has her family owns a funeral facility, a large funeral facility in Chicago. She talked about that. She talked about meeting with the woman identified as the aunt and being turned down, indicating that $2,100 was not acceptable, which I'm a little confused on that. We talked in terms of your role. If you could maybe help us out, you were apparently the person who first. Weren't you? Were you one of the first? I've heard this rumored. Were you one of the first people to approach the family after the tragic death of the little boy? If you were and you don't feel constrained, could you just indicate what the heck has happened here?
As far as I know, I am. If there is anyone else who approached the family, I'm not aware of them. I did get a call. First of all, I wasn't aware of the situation that there was a little boy they found hung. I happened to be at the doctor's when I got a call from someone telling me about the situation and explaining that the family didn't have any money and asked if I would reach out there to them. So I did that. That was last Tuesday. I went over to 32nd and Bryant.
Last Tuesday or the Tuesday before?
That would have been...
He perished on the 27th of June.
Right. So it would have been not this Tuesday past, Tuesday before. So I
That's
have to remember last Tuesday means Tuesday already. So Tuesday of last week.
Okay.
And so I did as I promised that I would personally go over there to the family's house. So when I went over to 32nd and Bryant, I realized there was this vacant house. And a neighbor crossed the street who identified herself as Gwen. I told her who I was, and I gave her my number, and then she said, well, I told her who I was looking for. So she took me to the next block, which is 32nd and Aldrich, and introduced me to a woman when we knocked on the door called Talia, who said she was a little boy's aunt. So we exchanged numbers.
And let me say this for the purposes of because we have an international audience, a national audience. You actually made contact on July 2nd.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's kind of surprising because people are talking as if it just happened. So you made contact with the family on the second day of July. Is that correct, Ms. Williams?
That is correct.
All right. I'm sorry. Continue on, please.
Okay. So the woman introduced herself as Talia. We exchanged
numbers. So she invited you in and you met with other family members?
I was strictly at the door. I never entered. So she wrote her name down with her phone number. I exchanged my number and explained to her what I did and that if they needed any kind of assistance, I would be there to help them through the process. And I informed them that I'm coming on behalf of community people who've reached out to me. And
so you had some community folks contacted you and asked you to look in on these
reach
folks
out to
and
the family.
To see if you could be of
mm-hmm.
any assistance in your
right.
professional role. Oh, okay, thank
exactly.
you, Ms. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
And after that, time passed. I didn't hear anything. And then I think it was Tuesday, I got another call asking if I was aware that WCCO was asking for funding.
This was
for
on
the
July 9th, right?
July
9th. This on July 9th.
Tuesday,
okay, this past
passed.
Tuesday. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That was I aware that Rich Chapman was asking for funds, and there was an account set up for the little boy, and I'm like, no. I just assume everything was taken care of because when I met with Talia, she just made reference that they were going to send the little boy out of town. So given that a whole week had passed by, I just assume everything had been taken care of. So I was truly surprised. And so I, again, reached out to Talia. That's the only number I had, which was the aunt, and that's how she identified herself as. And she told me, well, her aunt was handling everything and that her aunt had tried to reach me. At that point,
okay.
I didn't realize that the aunt had already tried to reach me.
Okay.
So then when I made contact with what appeared to be the great aunt, I introduced myself to her, explained to her what I did and blah, 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 and that I learned that she needed help. And she told me, yeah, and that she needed $6,000 to bury the boy, totally to cover the expenses here and those in Chicago.
Okay.
And I asked her what was the breakdown of the funeral. And she told me that she owed Washburn about $3,600.
Okay.
And that the funeral home in Chicago had initially quoted her around $500, but they increased it once they learned that the body was coming there. They were going to have to pick him up, take him to the church, and blah, blah, blah. And
okay.
that she didn't have any money. And she wanted to know, well, Miss Williams, what can you do for me? And I explained to her that I'm not an organization. I'm a little individual for the past 7 years who've worked to help families and that I had people that sometimes I can go to get help. And I told her first, since Rich Chapman has taken the lead on here, I
now, this is Rich
him.
Chapman of television WCCO. Station WCCO
yes.
Channel 4, which is a
right.
CBS affiliate here in Minneapolis.
Right.
And the Twin
and,
Cities. The same Rich
right.
Chapman. That's who you're talking about. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Right.
Okay.
And so I told her that I, since Rich has been on the lead on this, that I would go through him, talk with him, because I told her it's been in my experience when you got too many people involved, things just fall through the crack and things don't come out. So out of respect for Rich, I told her I would call him since he'd set up an account, first of all, to see what kind of funds been established, and I would work through that way. And then she just asked me, well,
you mean Mr. Chapman, Rich Chapman had set up an account?
Yeah, oh, well, she told me there that had an account set up.
Oh, she said account had been set up. Okay.
Yeah, an account.
Now, was this the beautiful foundation account?
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so I told her since Reg Chapman had posted on WCCO and had been taking the lead on this about the account been set up and helping, that out of respect, then I will work through him because normally it works better when you have one person point of contact and everybody working on the same accord.
Okay.
And so she just said, well, who else do you know? And what about the churches, and specifically, what about Reverend McAfee? And I said to her that churches don't have the luxury of handing somebody $6,000. Okay?
Not black
and then,
churches, right. right.
Well,
yeah. okay.
And I said, well, I know that Don Allen, the blogger, has put it on his webpage, so people are really trying to help you raise the money. And she asked me for Don's number, and I gave it to her. And then I asked her, help me so I have a good understanding of what these costs are, because this sounds like a lot of money for Washburn Bill to be $3,600.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I do know is that when you are doing a ship out, which means family really should just use one funeral home. So when she told me the bill was $3,600, I know from my experience that just appeared to be a lot, because if she had used the funeral home in Chicago, which I think it was Gatlin or somebody, you know.
Yes, Gatlin.
I'm not saying I'm
correct.
She had used Gatlin funeral home. Gatlin would have used a national shipping company, and typically that's Inman. They charge $890 to pick up a body, have it embalmed, all the necessary things, plus airfare. So the cost would have been relative around $1,400. Now, this is something that the funeral home could have told this family, given that they knew the status of the little boy, how he died, the circumstances, and the fact that this family didn't have any money. That was an easy option, an easy solution. And then she said, well, it included a casket for $1,250. And I'm like, wow.
A casket for $1,250?
$1,250.
Mm-hmm. A child's casket or an adult casket?
I thought she said...
I mean, it really doesn't make any difference when you talk about the amount.
Right.
$1,250?
Exactly.
Wow.
And so I said, well, you know, that with the casket, I said, I can defer, get that cost down. I said, I have connection with funeral homes and funeral directors where I can get a casket at cost, or I have...
And if you could, Ms. Williams, I mean, so that there's absolute transparency here, and you are a professional, you've been doing this for quite some time. At cost means what? What's the figure for at cost?
A cost on a metal casket is about $310.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
I've also throughout the years have had where I have had the relationship where a casket company would donate it in the circumstances like this. So I told her I could also get her casket donated, and she said, no, I'm not interested in changing anything, that the casket had already come in or something. And I said, well, that doesn't matter. A funeral home can always send a casket back. I said, since you haven't given any money, that means that the funeral home can send it back. And I know that from experience, and Ms. Brooke is more of an authority on that. If funeral home orders something or brings something in, they can send it back.
Okay,
and
all right.
So I just told her I would work on this, try my best to see what I can do. And we talked about crime reparation, and I told her
if you could, Ms. Williams, for those that really don't know and understand that, I mean, I do, but crime reparations in the state of Minnesota is what, if you could help us, madam?
If you are a victim of a violent crime in the state of Minnesota, crime reparation gives you $6,500. And that is if you did not contribute to your demise any kind of way. And it has to be ruled a homicide. So I told her it is not likely at this point that she would get these dollars because, from what I understand, the medical examiner had not ruled.
And still has not.
And then the crime reparation board meets every second Thursday of the month. And so from my experience, I had a case last year where the young man died, was killed in November. Well, the board kept deferring it, and the board can keep deferring it and deferring it. And finally, the decision was made in January, and he got $1,120, less than what the Hennepin County Funeral Assistance. Now, the other option that I explored was this. Given from what I was told, and I don't know any of this, so when families tell me things, I'm assuming that what they're telling me are the facts. I was told that he was from Georgia. So then from my experience, I know that in most states, every respective county has a funeral assistance program. There are states and instances where there is none. And in some states, families can only get cremation. So then I contacted Georgia. I was told the little boy lived in DeKalb County. So I made contact with them, and I learned this. They only pay if the little boy had died in Georgia.
DeKalb County.
Since the little boy didn't die in the county, he was ineligible.
Okay.
So then I heard that the little boy was from Chicago. And so then I called there. But the problem was establishing residence. I was told that the little boy had only been here 2 months. He was simply visiting, and so it was really difficult to try to seek assistance. So, so I think it was Wednesday morning. I reached out to Margaret Brooks and say, Margaret.
And that's Wednesday of this week. Go right ahead.
Wednesday of this week. I reached out to Margaret Brooks and say, hey, Margaret, Helen, I told her this situation. And I'm like, can you help me identify with a funeral home in Chicago? My goal was to see if I could find a funeral home in Chicago willing to do the kid's body for free, given that he was from Chicago. And so Margaret said, well, Helen, don't worry about it. I will pick up the little boy from Washburn, negotiate with them on their fees. And what families need to know is this. Once you've called a funeral home to pick up your loved one, the only thing you're obligated to pay under Statute 149, which guides funeral and the operation of funerals, the only thing you're obligated at that point is to pay for the service that already had been rendered. So at this point, the only thing Washburn had done was pick up the body and embalm. Mm-hmm. Okay? So okay. Picking up the body.
If you could just hold your point there just a second, Ms.
Okay.
Williams, and I appreciate the patience of my colleague, Mr. Allen. I have to ask you a question because I'm puzzled by a series of circumstances pertaining to the investigation of the tragic death of the young man. You've not indicated, because you first met with the family on the second day of July, is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
And then you began re-engagement with them 7 days later, so that puts it around the 9th and the 10th and et cetera. When did you talk to the mother and father?
I've never talked to a mother and father.
Oops. I'm sorry, Ms.
No.
Williams. I mean, I don't question the authenticity of what you said, but I had heard these reflections that the mother and father were here in the city and were on site.
I have no idea. All I was told is that the mother was in Atlanta, Georgia. Now,
the mother
what
was
is
in Atlanta?
Okay.
Okay. Let me
what
cut through.
Quite,
I have to ask as
okay.
a journalist. So who was it that has been authorizing, because one of the things that I know, I mean, you are clearly a person who has been involved, but one of the things that I know as a journalist, my colleague, Mr. Allen, also, there has to be a specific person who under color of law is authorized and is the guardian and custodian of the deceased. Who authorized the body to be taken from the medical examiner's office, because the medical examiner actually had finished the autopsy on the 2nd of July. Who authorized the transfer of the body from the medical examiner to Washburn McCreevy, and then who has authorized the transfer of the deceased to Chicago, Illinois? I mean, are you in any position to go ahead?
That poses a good question because under Statute 149, again, that's the law that guides how the disposition of the body and who have the rights and et cetera. The disposition of body lies in the hands of the legal next of kin. My understanding that the little boy has a mother and a father. So legal next of kin is first, if the mother and father is not married, then the disposition of body lies in the hand of the mother. Now, if the mother can exercise her right to will her power to someone else if the dad relinquishes his power. So I have no idea who authorized anything. All I was told from the great aunt, I think she said her name was Latia, I think.
And what was her last name? And her last name was what?
I don't know any last name. I've not heard of any last name.
Oh, oops. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Okay.
Go right ahead, Ms. Williams.
All I know is that she said that she was making all the arrangements and et cetera, and that by no means was the mother is in a frame of mind or the aunt to make these kinds of decisions.
Or the
and
father.
I respect
or
that.
Or the father, right?
There was no mention of a father.
Oh. Well, okay. But I repeat what I said earlier, that on Monday and Tuesday, I mean, I was hearing that the father was also here in the city and people. In fact, Mr. Allen, some of those that have been critical of you, sir, were saying that the father was here. In fact, one of the bloggers said they had talked to the father.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got a lot of people.
But anyway,
I
don't want to, because Ms. Williams is giving us her time on a Saturday. If you would, Ms. Williams, continue and until you feel that you've satisfied this inquiry.
Okay. So when I reached out to Ms. Brooks, she said, Helen, I will do this for $2,100. I would negotiate with Washburn on having picked up the body, embalming him. I would negotiate. I provide a casket, whatever casket they want of their choice. She said she would transport the body to Chicago, use her family funeral home, handle the arrangements there, prep the baby in terms of getting him dressed in his casket. She would take him to the church. She would even try to get a cemetery plot in a cemetery for them. All the things she needed to get him buried for $2,100.
And that's what she said earlier on this program at the top of the hour.
Okay.
Go right ahead.
Okay. And so I said, wow. Okay. So then I already had a source who was willing to pay for it. So I called my source. They said, no problem.
By the way, Miss Brooks indicated that also, and she maintained the confidentiality. But I want to be sure that I'm hearing you properly.
So my
an anonymous source
no
offered
problem.
To incur the cost.
Yep, all of it. Okay.
I have to ask you this question, Miss Williams. I mean, I don't necessarily know. Was that someone within the African American leadership community or the African American community?
No.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Continue on.
Okay. One of the things that so then I disclosed to community leaders that what was on the table. And
you talked
so,
to community leaders?
Mm-hmm. I don't
okay,
want to
I won't,
close
I won't,
who
I at this point
to,
with the attention in this
right,
city. I will not ask
right,
you to identify, but
right,
you did
and
talk
I,
to community
right,
leaders. Okay. Okay.
Right. Because okay, I believe that there should be a protocol, an order in which we do things. And since the family had already met with a community leader who posted out that they had met with them and put out the amount that the family needed and asked everybody to give. So I, rather than everybody working and going back and forth with the family, I went call up this person say, and told them my offer, and they said, oh, that's very reasonable. And then they said, well, I will call her, and I'll call you back. They did
okay,
that and called me back and said the woman rejected the offer.
Of $2,100?
Yes. The $2,100 okay, knowing that I had somebody who would pay for it and it would wipe out the $6,000 that she was looking for. Now, this $2,100 granted covered everything. The negotiation with Washburn for having picked the body up and embalmed, mm-hmm, it would have removed all the fees in Chicago, the whole $6,000, because that's what the great aunt told me she needed totally. It was $6,000. So now we're looking at the $6,000 being washed away in exchange for $21,000. Margaret was going to take out of the $2,100 whatever money she needed to satisfy Washburn them for having picked the body up and embalmed it.
She said approximately $500. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Right. Okay. And it was rejected. And at that point, I called WCCO, and Reg was leading it, and I explained to him the same thing. Here's what I've got, and Reg was excited about it. He said, Chapman, he said he would send her brother to tell her this. And so everybody was pretty excited about that because at this time, he said there was about $72 in the account. Helen is not looking good. About $72 in this whatever foundation it's called.
Okay. Yeah, got you. Go right ahead. Okay.
Okay.
The beautiful
so,
foundation, but go ahead.
Beautiful uh-huh, foundation. And he uh-huh, said, this is amazing. So we were all pretty excited that this was happening. And so he said he would send her brother over there to talk to her. Rich calls me back and said she's declining it. She wants to stay with Washburn and she wants things the way it is. And she just wants people to give her
$6,000.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
And
okay,
so at that point, you know, I just kind of backed out of it because I didn't feel if that was right for me to go ask people in my community and knock on any doors, ask people in my community who lives from paycheck to paycheck to pay for a funeral when it's already been taken care of.
I have to say, and Mr. Allen, we're going to 4:30. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. And the reason I have to say this, Ms. Williams, again, because we have both an international and domestic audience, I was told by sources that at a facility in North Minneapolis that it also offered that people – African Americans and others were actually standing in line to make donations of anywhere of $10, $20, $30, $50 in the name of this child. So this community did rally, but yeah, it just makes me wonder how much money is unaccounted for.
But
go ahead.
Here's my point. In handling families, we need to be consistent with the way we treat families. We need to have a process that's consistent and fair. And all the families I help, I bury them under Hennepin County funeral guideline. Here's the deal. If Hennepin County had given $2,100, the family contributes $14, the cap is $35.
Mm-hmm.
The family would not have had the luxury of going to buy a $1,200 casket. If they did, they would not be eligible for Hennepin County. Now, if any family member don't like the county guidelines and don't like what they're given, if they reject it, the county don't pay. Then they're on their own.
Okay.
Okay. And so I know, and people in this community know, that I worked really hard over the 7 years to bury family. I had an instance of a young lady named Tina Milan. Same situation, same funeral home. Miss Milan had been in the funeral home for over a month. Okay.
Yes,
the funeral home knew that this woman, the mother worked at Walgreens making less than $10 an hour, didn't have a penny. She explained it to them, and they just had her wait it out and wait it out. So as I remember, the prayer church on Broadway called me and said, "Miss Helen, please help this young lady," and I got lots of calls.
Mm-hmm.
And I reached out to Margaret Brooks then, and we were able to bury Tina Milan by getting a casket at cost. And we were able to put her in the ground. And then I was able to get her. She wanted a grave plot at Oak Hill, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I told her I can't guarantee.
And that's
the
cemetery here in the Twin Cities for our National Listening Audience. Okay,
right.
Gotcha.
And mm-hmm. the reason she wanted there, she had a son there. And I told her I can't guarantee her that. But so luckily I saw a woman. I do a lot of digging, helping families on grave solution, a site where families, people sell their graves. I called mm-hmm. this woman up, and the story has been out there, and it's on the news and everything. I called Miss Virginia Elliott up in Culpeper, Virginia, and explained my situation and after she would be willing to donate. And she said, "Wow, you do a lot for families." And she said, "I will consider it." So the next day the lady called me. She said, "Helen, I read about you. I'm going to donate both of the graves." So then that's how I was able to put her where she wants. If she wasn't there, then she had to accept what there was. And that's what people have typically done. If you don't have any money and somebody have found a way for you to bury your loved one, and everybody knows, I don't just bury families. You will not see them in a shoebox like the little 12-year-old boy was buried in. Okay?
You're talking about young Mr. Braxton.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Okay. That was humiliating. I got calls about that, and I had nothing to do with
that.
That
was the funeral at Shiloh International Ministries. Yes, right.
I make sure every family that I bury is in a metal casket, and they're buried with dignity, and everybody who knows me know that.
Right.
I don't sidestep. And I was very pleased with what we had come up with Margaret, because pleased for me is what I would bury my loved one in. Everybody knows that.
All right, Ms. Williams, we have to move on. I think we have probably some calls. But my colleague, Mr. Allen, do you have any questions?
I appreciate your call. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Well, we're at the top of the hour, and what's the number in case people want to call in and question?
The number is 347-426-3904. And we do have a caller that's been on hold for 9 minutes, and I would like to get this person.
Well, we apologize, and let's get them on.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Caller, you're live on the air. Who are we speaking with?
Hi, this is Lisa.
Hey, how are you?
Okay, I have so many concerns about this program. I am just shocked about the content of this program. I didn't get to hear Ms. Brooks, and I really wish I had, because she and I spoke on the phone. We had a conversation. First, I want to say thank you to Helen Williams for all the hard work that she does do in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll say this. It is not our decision on what funeral home any family chooses. Now, you know, Ron, I have my concerns. And I told everybody, anybody who had concerns about where the money was going, to take it right to Washburn McCreevy. If they didn't want to put money in this beautiful account, take it right to Washburn McCreevy.
And
that's what
a lot of people did.
Lisa,
you're not listening.
Here's my problem.
Okay.
When I talked to Ms. Brooks, and I really wish I had heard what she said on here. I'll have to listen to it later.
Mm-hmm.
She spoke to the aunt. And
she had a great conversation
with the aunt. In fact, the reason she was calling the aunt was to find out where they were going to have the funeral so that Brooks Funeral Home could send some flowers
to that family.
And I thought that was an awesome thing she was doing.
Yeah, that was done.
But to have a show where you want to tell people where they should send their loved ones' remains to be serviced.
No one has even suggested in this program that
when
that was what was
done. When you're talking about how much cheaper something would have been, you are suggesting
you got to let other people talk. This had to do with the discussions that you're talking about that were held involving the aunt between both Miss Brooks and Miss Williams.
Right. I understand that, Ron. But why is it an issue? Because she sent the child to watch Vern McCreevy. He had already been dressed and embalmed. She wanted to leave him there. She needed 3711. I didn't even trust myself. That's how much it costs to wash Vern McCreevy.
Oh, no, no. See what happened. You need to take time and listen to Miss Brooks.
Yeah.
Because it actually cost $2,100. That's what Miss Brooks was offering. Miss Brooks was going to do
everything
for $2,100.
No, I did miss what you. I did miss it, Ron. I know what she was offering. She told me the same thing. But the family decided to leave him at Wash Burn McCreevy, and that was their choice. Nobody
We all agree. No one disagrees with that.
The difference in the money. Let me just say this last thing. Don't worry, because I want to say something about that little chicken head, Terry, in a minute. But, like, the family needed $3,711 to bury this child. The community decided to come together and help cover that cost.
Absolutely, and that's
so
been said time and again on this program.
If we don't mind paying it, I don't understand why the conversation is being had.
Wait. You don't say that on this radio station. Second of all, there have been many of black kids who live in Minnesota, Minneapolis, killed in North Minneapolis, and there hasn't been a nickel raised.
Y'all didn't make the effort to raise it. I made an effort to help raise the money.
No, it's not because of me. Okay. Now the thing is, now where's the mother and father? Have you had contact with them?
I don't care. You know what I care about, Don? I care that 9-year-old Michael Sullivan's body made it to Illinois to be buried. I don't care where his mom and daddy is. I don't care if they're crackheads, drug addicts, gangbangers. I don't care. You're losing sight of what we wanted. Now we need to be asking what happened to him. That's what we should be focusing on. Not who raised money to send him home to his final resting place.
If you get a chance, Lisa, listen to the interview with Miss Brooks. Okay.
I got nothing but love for her. Bye.
Okay. I'm confused because why are we being criticized for allowing people who were engaged in reaching out and helping the family, as Ms. Clemens did. But why is there this almost a sense of hostility? I'm not understanding this, Al.
Ms. Harris, if I could analyze this real quick for you here.
Okay.
Every few years in North Minneapolis, you have a set of new people that want to feel good about themselves, that want to get in front of the TV cameras, that want to be on the news. And some of them intentionally, you know, they do good stuff and, you know, they end up, you know, making a small difference. But what happened in this situation, it's very suspect. And again, we're not criticizing who or where or whatever the child was, what funeral home he was in, but we're concerned about the process. We've always been concerned about the process. How come Reverend Clarence Hightower and CSI did not donate some of that money they got from the school district and the state to bury this child? Where are the people that are supposed to be working on the street, these nonprofit agencies, that this should not be an issue? We should never have a whole, I mean, not that we should never have, but it shouldn't be the burden of the community to raise that kind of money. You know, this kid, we don't know who this child's parents are. We don't know what school he went to. We don't know his economic circumstances.
Well, that's why I said that people need to kind of listen to the entire program, including Miss Brooks, including Miss Williams, and some of the reflections they made because they went out and did the work. But let's do this, Don, because I'm just sensing this need to attack of different folks. people are now saying we need to concentrate on the investigation. So I'm going to throw this out. Maybe Ms. Clemens or others can call back. Where do we stand on the investigation, and what is it that people have been told about the investigation and the circumstances leading to the death of 9-year-old Michael Sullivan? Anybody, the phone lines are open. You understand people are talking about now need to concentrate. Is that correct, Mr. Allen? Because all this is recaptured on demand, that need to concentrate on the circumstances leading to the child's death. Now, is that a door we really want to open? Kind of a question I ask myself. But the phone lines are open for those that know how the investigation is going.
Yeah. Okay, come on,
can we get any kind of call? Let's give that number out again.
That number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. If you know anything about the investigation of 9-year-old Michael Sullivan and the mysterious surrounding, oh, and we have a caller, Mr.
Edward. Let's get the caller.
Bingo.
The caller,
do you have an answer to that question? You're live on the air, caller. Do you have an answer on that question? I guess not. So, the phone lines are still open, 347-426-3904. And the chat room is closed.
Well, let me go. I'm hearing these statements that the program is being called irresponsible and ridiculous and et cetera. I understand that. But let me go back over a couple things, okay? Because yours truly, has a good mind of recall. Now, doing the reflections by Ms. Williams, who did talk to authorities in Georgia and other places, she said something was rather disturbing, and that's what Mr. Allen calls me to ask the question about the mother and father. Of course, we were just told that is not relevant to anything. Okay. But here's the problem. When the homicide took place, because that's what the coroner is going to have to rule, that it was a homicide. Boy, if he rules that it was a suicide, I would assume that many of these people will be up in absolute arms. But when he ruled, when the coroner and received the body and the police indicated that this child had come here, that was a factual statement by Ms. Williams, that the child had come here 2 months ago. Okay,
yeah.
Which, kind of surprising. It looked like he got out of school pretty early. So one of the things Ms. Williams said, and that's why I encourage people to always go back and listen on demand, she indicated something peculiar because we were told that the child was from Atlanta, Georgia. Remember that, Mr. Allen?
Yes.
We talked about it on his program. Of course, Atlanta is not in DeKalb County. Atlanta is in Fulton County, right?
Yes.
But, you're splitting hairs. But Ms. Williams indicated that she called authorities in Georgia and DeKalb County and Atlanta, and they didn't have any record of 9-year-old Michael Sullivan. But then during the week, I heard statements being made that he had been here for 6 months, and then later on statements being made that he had gone to school here in Minneapolis. Okay, well, that begins to raise questions about the authenticity and the accurateness of information coming from people that quote-unquote were in charge of him, that they had been given custodial trust for him, right? Now,
right.
I assume that and contrary to what was said, no one tried to tell the family of where the child should be buried. And if the family wanted to go $4,000, $5,000, $7,000 more because they wanted the child buried and handled by a mortician in Chicago, Illinois, God bless them. But we've been challenged with where, and I'm challenging, where is the investigation, okay? Now, there appears to be no mother or father that is being identified. So, that's going to certainly create a problem for the police, but I know that the people are out there will help the police find the mother and father, be it in DeKalb County or Atlanta or Chicago or Minneapolis, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, the coroner has not made a determination, and I guess I was a little disappointed that people weren't concerned about that because the coroner, as I said before, completed the autopsy on the second day of July, okay? He completed the autopsy, but for whatever reason, he has not rendered a medical opinion and a legal opinion, okay? Well, hopefully leadership will be on top of that. Dr. Baker appears. By the way, Dr. Baker is the chief medical examiner for Hennepin County. That's the county we reside in. But I assume that there would be a demand to Dr. Middleton, who is the assistant coroner, that there be a pronouncement. Don't you think we should have a pronouncement? I mean, in it, the autopsy was oh, that's right, though. They have to wait for certain tests. But you would think July 2nd, we're coming up on July 16th, so that should be 2 weeks. Hopefully that would be time enough for the necessary testing, forensic, and et cetera. So I would hope, Mr. Allen, that we would have a report and a determination by the medical examiner. And then I would hope that the homicide unit, and you got to remember now, child protection was ordered into this investigation.
Yes.
That they would then be prepared to give a definitive statement. And do they have any suspects? Do we have any? Does anyone out there? Can anyone call us on this program? Because we know all y'all listening. Can you call and just indicate if you are aware if there are any suspects in this case?
That would be nice to get a call.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. I mean, you know, I just can't believe that this child committed suicide. But that's just not something that children at that age do.
No.
So, you know, certainly need help with where's the investigation at, if you will. Let me make this suggestion also. I think this would be an excellent time because now one of the things that happened in the Mays case, and actually it was the police department that went out and did it. I mean, I kind of hate to say that, but it was them. It was very high-ranking officers. They went out and got $50,000 more, right?
Yes.
The reward in the case of that is $60,000. I'd like to see community put up at least $5,000 for a reward leading to information pertaining to the death of Michael Sullivan. Don't you think that's fair?
I think that's very fair.
Yeah.
I think that would really help
people to come forward from the neighborhood and the community to talk in terms of what they know because, I mean, the investigation has been dragging, I mean, to say the least, okay? So I'd just like to propose that, you know, certainly leadership and organizations and et cetera could, you know, put out a $5,000 reward.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great idea.
For information leading to the death of 9-year-old Michael Sullivan on the 27th day of June, the year of our Lord, 2013. I just think that that would be consistent with what it is that certainly this community wants to know. Because here's the thing. We may have a serial killer in our midst.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
Okay. We may have a serial killer. I mean, I don't know. So, anyways, but let's move on because we have this Viking Stadium situation, and I know we had some people that wanted to call in, and we haven't been able to get to it. I understand big meeting yesterday, and the contracts are being negotiated, and there are no African-Americans participating at this hour?
No, there was no. There was no brothers there, no sisters there. No,
and they had two meetings, one at 10 and one at 2, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. One at 10 and one at 2. I am actively getting the agenda off the file here, which I should have had up 5 minutes ago. But, yeah, Mr. Edwards, yesterday at Mortensen's headquarters out on Golden Valley Road, there was a meeting held, and it was for pre-procurement package number 1 at 10 a.m. and pre-procurement package number 2, which was the mechanical, plumbing, and electrical. And I went to the first one because this is a long-span steel structure, ETFE, and they were talking about the RFPs. And so all the people, you know, in the room, including representatives from the Minnesota Vikings, the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority, and Lynn Littlejohn, the outreach, you know, the, what do you call
diversity.
That?
Diversity. She's the diversity director for Powerful Mortensen. Yes. Lynn Littlejohn, yes.
She was there, and she actually walked up to me and asked me, was I there to bid on steel? You know, and I politely told her, I'm here to look and listen. And I walked into the room. I was probably number 47 to walk into the room because I was taking an accurate head count. And I stayed in excess of 20 minutes, Mr. Edwards, but it shocked me and I couldn't move from my place at the door because I was searching for black contractors that would be interested in this particular procurement package.
Okay.
And we have to have these people out there somewhere. I mean, my God, they get trained at Summit Academy OIC. So I thought, you know, that we'd have, you know, some brothers out there ready to, and sisters and Native Americans and Somalis and Asians out there to bid with the Caucasian people. And so, Mr. Edwards, I was very nervous in the room, to say the least, and it shocked me that there was no representation from the contractors, the African-American contractors side.
Well, not average. They're called the minority contractors. So.
The minority contractors, yes, yes. I mean,
okay.
Go ahead, please.
Go ahead.
You did have Tim Kennedy from Minneapolis Economic Development Agency there, who actually is an employee
known as
for
MITA. Okay, okay.
MITA, who's an employee for MITA, but also has, if not currently, sat on the board for the National Association of Minority Contractors, and who is, his agency has been the recipient of some pretty nice packages from Minnesota Department of Transportation and other state agencies. And so as it pertains to helping the unhelped black contractor here in Minnesota. And so, I mean, he could have been the face of the black community out there at this particular meeting. You know, no telling.
Okay. Now, by the way, for our listeners, that are, you know, talking in terms of the children, and I'm talking about, you know, children of working age and et cetera, and they're concerned, this is a $1 billion contract, and the actual construction employment piece is $753 million. 7,500 workers, and if the project, during the 3 years of its life, if you will have 1,500 employees on-site each and every day. Okay, probably actually Monday through Saturday. They may even work on Sundays if they start to get behind schedule. I want to repeat that again. 7,500 workers, 1,500 on-site each and every day, okay? And we were told African-Americans, or, well, in this case, minorities, would be 32% of the workforce, okay? which is clearly not going to happen. But that's not a good start, because you would have thought that at least 15 to 20 to 30% of the persons in the room yesterday would have been persons of color, if you will, or, well, not minorities, because Caucasian women are minorities.
Yeah, but, exactly.
Yeah.
No, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Do we have a call?
No. I was just agreeing
because
with
I was,
you on that.
God, I was really hoping someone could tell us where the investigation is at.
Yeah. No telephone calls at all. Just someone in the queue and the full chat room. So, yeah, but Mr. Edwards, to continue this, you know, in the state of Minnesota, when they say minorities, it leans or skews to Caucasian women. And so,
yes.
I mean, there was a large representation of minorities in that sense in the room. And
Caucasian women. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. And so, okay. But yeah, I mean, I found it very, how can I put this? It was shocking, number one. Disconcerting,
okay.
But also, we have to look, Mr. Edwards, and take a look now at also the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce under the auspices of Ms. Leah Haggard, who reported here on this station months ago, or in January, was the recipient of the $300,000 grant from the Minneapolis Foundation that has been in there for 9-10 years, actually. It was from Target, when Target stores moved off Broadway Avenue, gave a grant for black businesses on Broadway Avenue that the businesses have not seen. But I have an email here sent to an undisclosed source from the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce, sent July 11th, a day before the meeting at 2:30 p.m., announcing Morton Construction along with Thor Construction are soliciting RFPs for Minnesota Murphy Multipurpose Stadium. The email is kind of misleading, but you know, and didn't really explain in detail, and it shocks me that, you know, the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce continues to get away with this foolishness.
I understand, though, that on site yesterday at the Minnesota Black Chamber of Commerce, who is now, I guess, a special consultant, is Ms. Roxanne Gibbons. Is that correct?
Yeah, there was telephone calls made, and Roxanne identified the caller or the person who answered the phone. I identified by herself as Roxanne, and I said, "Oh, interesting." So we will have to find out. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that it was certainly because the word is that she's been brought in as a special consultant, which would certainly help for construction, if you will. Well, so we should be getting a feel, though the contracts by statute are not required to, well, contracts obviously have been awarded. I mean, the largest contract was the $50 million contract for our, the architect, HKS of Dallas, Texas. But, you know, I began to realize that these kinds of reflections and discussions are really not relevant to many people, I guess, in their how they feel and et cetera. So maybe we're some ways wasting our time, though. You know, I know I certainly will make sure that this information continues to flow out.
Mm-hmm.
But we are now talking about $753 million that's at play and 7,500 jobs. Wow. Well, maybe there'll be some concern about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
At some point. You
and,
know what I mean? So, well,
yes,
we're coming up on about 9 minutes, right? Anything else that we have?
Yes. Yes. Well, also, you know, we need to dive into this this MnDOT fiasco because Mr. Edwards, you and I did talk to people at MnDOT that told us that you know, when Hope Jensen was running MnDOT, there was some challenges and she was demoted. And now former MnDOT Civil Rights Director Mary Prescott gets a $4 raise and a job extension despite failing with performances.
$4 an hour.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and you know with how they treated Hope Jensen, the African-American woman that was a Civil Rights Director,
they actually
demoted her and transferred her within MnDOT, and it looks like, you know, they gave Mary Prescott a raise and, you know, another position close to her house. And so there's a lot of...
She's four minutes away from her home, according to her statements of some individuals.
And so there's some chaos behind that right now, and then we're taking a close look at that. And one other thing we need to update people on, you might get a chance, listeners, in Minneapolis proper, if mayoral candidate Doug Mann pulls off what he's trying to pull off, the Viking Stadium will go to the ballots in November. On Tuesday, July 16th at 9 a.m., Doug will file a petition for writ of memorandums with the city clerk, or the clerk of the district.
Writ of mandamus? Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Right.
And for the city of Minneapolis to file its charter and allow the citizens of Minneapolis to vote on whether to approve a special legislature with use of city sales tax and other sources to pay for a new Viking stadium. So guess what? Doug is running for mayor, and if he pulls this off, I think someone needs to put him in office. That's just how I see it. So.
Well, in the last 5-6 minutes, I mean, we need to give a quick history on that, because if his writ of mandamus is granted,
yes,
and the court, by the way, it immediately be appealed to the Court of Appeals and then to the State Supreme Court, but given the length of time that it will take to build this stadium, the courts will not be able to delay it. But, you know, if the which is what should have been done a year ago. I was surprised that those that were opposed to the Viking Stadium being located once again in Minneapolis didn't do that. They probably should have. But if the decision is made that there has been a violation of the city charter, which obviously was reflected in the 7-6 vote a year ago, it was, you know, it was about this time a year ago, the city council, I mean, in a bitter battle on a 7-6 vote, just barely committed itself to support the Viking Stadium and also put $150 million into the pot. But I tell you, Don, if Doug Mann is able to pull this off, he will become a front runner. I don't care what the rest of the candidates say about their candidacy, because that is the specific issue that caused three-term incumbent mayor R.T. Ryback to decide he couldn't run again because he couldn't win. That is a masterful stroke by Doug Mann.
Oh, yeah, I would say so. I would agree with you 100% on that. He did a move. We have a caller, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, let's get the caller. Too bad we don't have more time today. Let's get the caller.
Caller, you are live on the air. Who am I speaking with?
Hello, my name is Lisa, and I'm calling in. I know you're not talking about this, but I was listening to the incident with the child that had to be sent to Illinois. And I guess I wanted to just say it sounds like this story or this incident in some way is kind of like dividing some of the people in our community. I know this child is here. This baby is here from Atlanta, Georgia. Hadn't been in this state for no time at all. The mother is not in this state. I was there at the visual, and the concern about the finances is very important. You know that we as a community continue to step up when a child or when a family does not have the money they need to bury their child. That is very important. But one thing I think that's important is that we should go ahead and let this child be laid to rest today, and that we leave this alone and let the family continue to worry about this. We not let this be a concern of ours, because when we look more into this and we get more into what the investigation is all about, from what I heard from the community, we may not like what we hear. And so I think
that right? That's interesting.
Yes, we may not like what we hear. And I feel sorry for the baby, and I just think that we as a community should just let the Lord deal with this, and we continue to do what we do as a community when we have someone who is suffering. We don't need to look more into this. Let the police investigate.
Let the police do it? Okay.
If there is the wrongdoing, we need to be prepared to hold people accountable.
Oh, okay. All right, then. Anything else, Lisa? All right, thank you. Okay, thank you. God bless you. Okay, well, interesting position. Now, let me say this. I hope that let that then be the same position with regards to the tragedy at 2:45 this morning and at 26 in Washington, where two African-American women were gunned down. One was killed. That we just, you know, we shouldn't ask any questions, and we just leave it in the hands of the police, right?
Well,
yeah.
I agree
like
with
you. Like the T.T. Franklin situation, the Booker situation, things like that. Okay.
Yeah, leave it in the police. We can do that. We'll never get an answer, but, you know, I guess it's okay. I leave it to the courts, you know.
Definitely. By the way, jury is out in Sanford, Florida. I'm knocking on the board again. Let everybody
hear.
That's the gavel. This is the judge. Yes, sir. By the way, jury will probably be coming back in the next couple of days with a verdict. It may even come back today. Sanford, Florida. Let's leave it in the hands of God.
Yeah. Well, in closing out, we got less than 2 minutes, Mr. Edwards, counting down. Any final words here before we go on?
There is concern about the verdict coming out of Sanford, Florida, and I know that a number, including here, police departments around the country are on a state of high alert, anticipating if the verdict is not favorable to hold someone accountable for the death of Trayvon Martin, that there could be civil uprisings, if you will. But the key is that, you know, maybe just should not even ask any additional questions as regards to that either. I mean, let's just kind of begin to stand down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One thing that I do have in the back of my mind about the Lord, that mm-hmm. God never intended that his ministry would be for profit. Oops.
Yeah. Well, you know, he chased the people out of the temple,
he
turned over tables. That was the angry Jesus. He chased them out there selling and doing all this for profit in the temple. He chased them on out, okay? And for those of you that don't know nothing about that, you can read that in the Bible, or go over to the Minnesota Institute of Art and look at that picture and look at the anger in Jesus' face.
Yes. Okay? That's all we have. All right, then.
Okay. Thank you.
But maybe next week someone can tell us how the investigation is going.
Yeah. All right.
All right, then. All right.